This is an interview by Tony Duffy, volunteer guide Old Parliament House, with Mr. Wallace Brown, who was a long-term occupant of a parliamentary press gallery in the Old House. Welcome back, Wal.
Thanks very much.
How long from and to were you in the gallery here?
I came here in December or November of 1961 until we moved out in 1988.
Yes, working conditions in the old days in here?
Working conditions?
Yeah, up in the gallery?
Working conditions were in many ways excellent. They were cramped, uncomfortable. My room in the gallery, now long demolished, was one of the temporary, had one of the temporary rooms, temporary roof. And it leaked, and occasionally the drip would actually come through onto my desk after a heavy storm drip come through. After I got a bit annoyed about all this, after several storms and things, and I went to the Parliament House people and said, "Look, no one would believe this now. This roof is leaking over my desk." They said, "Oh, well, okay, we'll fix that," and they did. They got a great sheet of plastic and put it across the top to stop the leaking. Right? Sometime later, about 12 months later, a big storm and the roof leaked. I went to the Parliament House people again and I said, "Hey, listen, the roof's leaking again." He said, "I'm terribly sorry, but the Prime Minister's roof was leaking and we had to shift the plastic." And they moved the plastic across. True story. Mm. So, but it, you say working conditions. I say very efficient because everybody really knew everybody. It was excellent, really.
Yeah. Well, for many years I used to come in when we had big cricket or rugby at Manuka.
Yeah.
And try and do a recording for Sydney with, you know, one of the people from Sydney, Norman May, or one of those guys.
Yeah.
And it was a little tiny telephone box downstairs.
Yeah.
And Jim Maxwell used to do the cricket. Yeah. And we'd come from Manuka, we would have had a drink all day, maybe a couple at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And we'd have to sit down there with the sweat pouring off us until Sydney Central were condescending enough to take our call.
Yes. Yes. Now, an example is this. In 1988, Jim Killen did a documentary on the move from Old Parliament House to New Parliament House. He did a documentary on the Old Parliament House. And I remember he took us down to the non-members bar, and it was Michelle Grattan, Paul Kelly, and Richard Carlton, and myself. And Killen was interviewing us. And he said, "Now what do you think of the move to Old Parliament House, to the New Parliament House?" The other three, Kelly, Grattan and Carlton, they said, "Oh, it'll be great, we'll have more room, it's dreadful down here in Alba, it'll be tremendous." And Killen got to me and I said, "Well, I disagree." I said, "Small is beautiful, and that's how we ought to keep it."
Those old tin sheds out on the roof, when did they come in for? The ones that, you know... They'd have been in the early 70s, wouldn't they?
No, they were... Oh, the ones out across.
On the roof.
Oh, on the roof, yeah. Yes, in the 70s, yeah.
When the television news gathering started, of course.
Yeah, when the television got going, that's when they went across.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen the old gallery seats, have you, up there?
I've seen what's left of it.
What's left of it, yeah. Well, Peter Harvey was here a few weeks ago, and he's talking about getting people interested, going talking to the two media barons and saying, "Put your hand out, we'll restore the old Parliament House. Press gallery as to what it was, and let people go up and see it."
Well, we actually did that with our Old Parliament House Redevelopment Committee. Yeah. We had people going through the gallery, and I raised money for it from the media barons.
Yeah,
and we did it all up, and now it's all just disappeared.
Yeah, yeah,
no, extraordinary.
Lack of consultation, wasn't it, in those days? The actual working conditions could only be described as primitive, weren't they? I mean, they were terribly hard for electronic news gathering people.
Electronic in particular.
I mean,
not so bad for print, but for electronic as well.
Yeah, electronic, yeah. When electronic news gathering started ENG, the place wasn't equipped for it, was it?
No, it was.
I mean, our little studio downstairs, it was so hot, and you'd sit there waiting for Sydney Central to queue you, you know, to come. But it's, I don't know, I've only been up to the new press gallery up the top there a few times, but to me it's just a remote marble hall.
Oh, of course.
You know, it's like walking through a mausoleum.
Sure.
And you were saying on the phone to me that you were on the original committee that was formed to look after, decide on the future of Old Parliament House, is that correct?
Yeah, the original committee, when they finally decided they're going to keep Old Parliament House, was formed by the Keating government, or Nick Balkas, who was administrator of affairs minister, I think, actually formed it. He asked me to go on it, and the chairman of this was Doug McClelland, who was former president of the Senate and High Commissioner of London, and so on. And I was the media representative on it, and then we had the relevant heads of departments, prime ministers, treasury, and so on, and Margaret Coldrake, the National Museum director at the time, and I was the media representative on this, and we had several former MPs, Ralph Hunt, I remember it was one, Don Chipp, Gordon, I've forgotten Gordon's surname, Gordon Davidson. And when we met regularly here for some years, then the Howard government came in, and suddenly this committee just disappeared, and Doug Anthony's committee popped up. We got a letter saying thanks for your services. We've now got this other committee. And this committee just sort of disappeared. And it was called the Old Parliament House Redevelopment Committee. Bill Blick was on it, representing the Prime Minister's Department. Some very good people.
Yeah.
And it was this committee that actually got the press gallery going, got the refurbishing of the dining room going. And we met once a week for about 3 or 4 years.
That was before it was reopened generally to the public, I presume, was it?
Before it was opened generally, but it was then reopened. King's Hall was reopened, the library was reopened, and we had a special little exhibition up in the old ABC room, which the media, you were talking about Peter Harvey trying to do it again, but we actually did it then. We got the main media proprietors, News Limited, Fairfax, ABC contributed, Channel 7 contributed, Channel 9, and we refurbished the whole ABC, the old ABC room up here, as an exhibit of what the press gallery working conditions had been like, and the tours of Parliament House included a trek up to the old ABC room to look at all this. Mm-hmm. We had the old typewriters, the old telephones.
That was there when we reopened. It was still there, because I remember we started early 90s, didn't we? No, 93?
93, yeah.
We started in 93 and it was still there.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I went up and it had gone.
Well, I don't know where that equipment's gone. Yeah. What's his name? Hanson designed it for us.
Yeah.
In the National Museum. We had a very clever little thing where a puff of smoke came out now and again to demonstrate the smoke-filled atmosphere.
Yeah.
We had a picture of... there was a television broad screen and pictures of...
The only things left up there now are two telex machines.
We had this television thing of major events that had happened, including Gough on the steps at the dismissal, and all the equipment.
It would be interesting to know where all
now,
that
where went. Now, where that is gone, I gave them a thing called a Telegram, which was the first... laptop computer in the country, size of a small suitcase, heavy as lead, cost, carried it around the world several times with various prime ministers, and you had to put a coupler into the handset into the phone coupler to get the damn thing to work. Had all carried 18,000 characters, would you believe it, or so, and it cost $11,000. And that was on display up here.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I remember.
Now, I don't know where that's gone.
No,
Hanson or something.
I might give Guy Hanson a ring and see if he knows anything about it.
Yeah, well, that's all gone. The museum.
He's over at the National Museum.
The museum must have it.
Yeah.
Or it's somewhere here in the balance of the building. This equipment.
I'll ask the guy because we've known him since he was here.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to know because it suddenly disappeared.
You know, it always disappeared. And
the next thing we heard was they were going to strip it all down and do this, that and the other.
Yeah.
And the ABC people came aboard rather heavily and said, look,
where is
we
it?
Actually paid to have those cubicles put in for our sound thing.
Yeah, they did.
And they said, you know, why are you going to knock them down?
Yeah.
So they didn't. They're still up there, those three little sweat boxes that used to be up there.
But the whole exhibit was put there by media organisations.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
When I was on the committee.
Yep. Well, get on to Guy.
And then when Doug Anthony's committee superseded us, and I was in here one day and I saw all this had gone, I got a hold of Doug and I said, listen, what are you doing? What's happened?
Well, I see him when he comes down, which is not very often, but he and I played rugby together, you know, for North, and I looked after his minister's team for him, you know.
It'd be interesting to get hold of all this stuff, particularly the equipment.
Yeah,
if you had to revamp it for the second time.
Guy Hanson first and then Doug. I think, you know, knowing how they work, Doug and the American, they're doing a pretty good job with the civil public service squeeze into the place. They're insisting that certain areas be kept pristine, which is very essential because we've got the public service creep in here at the moment.
Yeah, right.
They suddenly disappear. You go past doors in the downstairs, and when we first reopened, I think there were about two offices down there. Now you walk along down towards the large committee room there.
Well, the only reason why this place got its original impetus after, you know, several years of neglect, until we actually persuaded governments, the Hawke Keating governments, to actually get going and save the place. The only reason was Doug McClelland putting the pressure on Paul Keating and saying, look, this would be a great thing to put in your Creative Nation speech, Creative Nation's thrust. Remember Keating had a Creative Nation speech? And that's how it all came. Suddenly, Keating was enthusiastic about it. Otherwise, I don't think we would have got there.
Well, it's certainly a thing to ask Guy Hanson, because I think they may be over at the National Museum. But, I mean, they shouldn't be at the National Museum. See, we don't take people up to the press gallery as guides anymore. We're not allowed to. But I do, because I take them up to show them the journalist gallery, you know, the back of the house one there.
Sure.
And explain to them, you know, that they had to spread out on the side, on that side, on the opposition side, because there are over 300 journalists in the building at that stage.
That's right.
When you take them up to the old press gallery, they look and say, 300 people, you know. I said, well, there were tin sheds out on the roof.
Yeah, on the other side.
Yeah. And
up in the attic on the other side.
Actually, Peter Harvey was saying that one of those at least should have been kept just to show how primitive and terrible they were. I mean, there was no air conditioning in them, was
nothing.
Fans that used to blow the fuses every 10 minutes, remember, and switch their fans on. It was really a terrible old place. What about some of the characters in the building?
You mean...
dear old Fred Daly, for what?
Oh, you mean members?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fred Daly. Well, the characters were... Fred Daly, of course.
Fred used to come in here until the day he died about once every week. And he'd tell you a story, and nine times out of ten you would have never have heard it. He had the biggest number of stories, dear old Fred.
Well, Killen, was, of course.
Oh, yeah.
One of the characters, as when he was government whip under Menzies. I mean, Menzies never really liked Killen much. And, and one night Jim got... a bit nicely and took down his government, took down the whip from the whip's office and decided to give a demonstration of whip cracking when he'd been a jackaroo out on the bar coup, and he stood outside Menzies' office there in the corner cracking the whip up and down the government lobbies at about 1 a.m.
I bet it cleared the non-members bar.
Cleared everybody. I don't know if Menzies was there at the time. I don't think he could have been.
Peter Harvey came strolling through here a couple of weeks ago. He's promised the next time in Canberra he'll come in and do a segment.
Good.
He reckoned that you could start a rumour down in the old non-members bar.
Yeah.
Run like
that. See how long it'd take to get back.
And meet you coming up the front steps. He said, especially during the budget session.
See how long it would take.
He said, normally you run up from the bar. Yeah. And it meets you coming up the front steps.
Yeah, it's one of the budget session was.
And someone was telling me the other day, and I had forgotten this, Mungo McCallum. Mm. Remember Mungo?
I do.
Used to sit on that stool in the corner by Alf Stafford's corner bar there, didn't he? On his stool.
Yeah.
And Alf used to run a book to see what time of the day he'd fall off his stool for the first time.
Yeah.
And before Alf died, I was talking to him at one of the PM's games, and he said, old Mungo, he'd come in about 10 o'clock in the morning, have his heart starter, and the hand would put the midi there, the empty, and the next one would go, and this would be, he never came up for question time, but he listened to it on the monitor. And apparently, old Stafford, Alf used to run a book on which time he'd fall backwards off his stool for the first time of the day. And he said, the red beard and the spindly legs would go up in the air, and away he'd go, pick himself up. Dust himself down, another midi. Characters. Not many up at the new place, are there?
Not many at the new place. No, maybe the building, I think. They just don't surface. But yeah, I mean, you had characters here in the press gallery too, of course.
I mean,
like Reed and Alan Reed and Ian Fitchett.
Old Moses Reed,
And Fitchett in particular was one of the great characters of the age, and then the Sydney Morning Herald. You know, you'd know the story of...
I go up to see my son at Newhouse quite often there, and he's in the personnel section. And to me, it's like walking around a tomb.
Mm.
You can walk for metres and metres and never see anybody.
Mm.
Marble halls, but it's so cold, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, it is, yes.
Impersonal.
Antiseptic. Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
What else are your favourite memories of the old place?
Well, apart from the... you know, the several dramatic moments that we had all in this building. I'm not really sure.
You were here, of course, on November the 11th, 75?
75, I was here.
What are your recollections of that tumultuous day?
Oh, well, it was, you know, it was very, very dramatic. Goff on the front steps, and most people surprised, actually, I think, when the House of Representatives voted no confidence in Malcolm Fraser as Prime Minister and confidence in the member for Werriwa, and that the Speaker didn't get to see the Governor-General and say, well, the House has no confidence.
I tell that story, and I've been howled down several times, and I'm sure I've checked and it was correct, wasn't it? The dismissal notice had already been signed.
Been signed?
Yeah.
Been signed.
But the supply had been passed.
Supply had been passed?
Yes.
Supply had been passed.
I've always been told by a historian in this building that never happened.
Supply had been passed?
Yes, it was. Apparently it was passed about, 11 minutes past two?
Yeah, well, early in the afternoon, Gough made the mistake of not telling his Labor senators that he'd been dismissed and that they ought to, and the coalition... They wheeled up the budget and the coalition let us through. And if Gough had said, well, situation has changed, or had a cabinet, a council of war meeting, Labor may have said, okay, well, we won't
resign.
We won't put up the budget.
No. It was a very, very traumatic couple of days, wasn't it?
Well, it was. Certainly was.
I remember Stuart Harris from the London Times. Stuart?
Yeah.
I bumped into him here that afternoon. He said, I can't believe it.
Mm.
I can't believe it. He said, yeah.
No. Well, I think most people thought that the House, having had carried most or no confidence in the Fraser, the government, that the Speaker would go to the Governor-General, and that the Governor-General would, having set the election in motion, that the Governor-General would reappoint Whitlam as Prime Minister, because the House had no confidence. And the election would have gone ahead, but it would have gone ahead with Whitlam as Prime Minister instead of Fraser as Prime Minister.
Do you think it, constitutionally, I don't think that can ever happen again, can it? It shouldn't happen again.
Well, constitutionally it can happen.
Mm.
Nothing's changed. The Governor-General has the
prerogative.
Has the reserve power still. Nothing's changed. The Senate has the same powers. We could say that it should not have happened, that the Governor-General should not have those reserve powers, but the fact is he does. It could happen again. It's mean it's they should make sure that it doesn't happen again by some means, and they could do that.
Very early on when we reopened, we used to have a lot of visits from old Bluey Thompson.
Oh yes, yeah.
And I got to know him well because he used to be down at Marnica on the pier cricket matches, don't you know? A lovely guy, and he used to come in. He still he was living in the old flats at Kingston in those days, the Stuart flats.
Yeah.
And he died.
He died, yeah. He
and no one ever found any of his memorabilia.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And yet he had a lot of it because he brought stuff in.
Yeah.
We think it's still locked away in some rotten garage or somewhere or other.
Yeah.
But I mean, he went everywhere with Hawke, didn't he?
He did.
In fact, I think he's one of his drinking companions at one stage.
Yeah, not as Prime Minister. Hawke wasn't drinking as Prime Minister.
No, but I mean, Bluey was.
Yeah, Bluey was.
Bluey never stopped drinking, did he?
Yeah,
he used to come in and he could talk for an hour. And if we had a programme like this now, I wish I could have got him in because some of the things he's, you could not believe, but he was here for a long time, of course.
Yeah, what other thoughts? In contrast to the tensions and aggravation of the dismissal. The night that this Parliament closed down was a moment of great harmony and most memorable night when they all, everyone stood and sang Auld Lang Syne in the House of Representatives, including members of the press gallery, and then the party went on until the dawn.
Yeah.
And Hawke was Prime Minister, Howard was opposition leader. Between them they formed led a conga down the government lobby.
I remember that. Yeah.
Playing, singing the Internationale. arms linked together. The surprising thing about all this was that we expected Hawke to know the words, but Howard knew the words too. It was quite a
contradiction in point.
Yeah, that was a memorable night.
Yes, and many memorable nights, weren't they?
Yeah.
What do you think of the house as it is now? You haven't had a chance to look at it, really. Have you been in since all these places reopened?
The house here?
Yes, yeah.
I was in there not so long ago. I think it's impressive. The Sonne Lumiere effect, or things.
Yes, I think it conveys the close atmosphere, and when you tell people that there were probably 80 people working in the PM suite.
Yeah. Last time I think I was in, you had Malcolm Fraser's voiceover on.
Yes, that was on that thing in the Rep Chamber.
In the Rep Chamber.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's being revised. I think Malcolm's ghost is being replaced.
Right.
He used to come out like a sepulchral figure.
Yeah, well, I thought that was good.
Yeah, it was good.
Mm.
But it's been here since since 94, so, we're having up to 12, 14 schools a day coming through here now,
which is
a bit of a worry.
That's
actually
good, yeah.
Especially on the fabrics, in the old chambers.
Yeah. And the National Portrait Gallery is excellent, of course.
Yeah.
Our old committee, the one I was referring to earlier, it was our committee that was actually here when the Darlings turned up and said, we've got an idea to put all our portraits in have a National Portrait Gallery here. That's how it all started.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, all the rooms along the lobby, I mean, they're used for the cartoons, Pickering and
Plum. Yeah, no, they're good.
They draw from them, a number of people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've been through that.
I was on the lot last long weekend on a Sunday and we had over 1,500 people through.
Yeah, I've been through, that's good.
While Floriard's on, you've better go look at King's Hall, it's just absolutely swamped.
Mm.
The architects apparently reckon now that the old place is good for another 200 years, structurally.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What are your recollections of the old green building over there, the old parliamentary lawn bowls and croquet club, wasn't it?
Yeah, over there, yeah, and the annex that went out there somewhere.
Yes, the New Zealand High Commission had that annex for a while, didn't they? That flying annex across.
I've forgotten where they got it from, but it was weird that you had to cross over a road to get to various members' offices.
You've seen all the gross work that's going on to redevelop the garden.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Well, it will be. I think it should have been done a long time ago. But there was a talk of knocking down that. And I think Barry Cohen went into bat very strongly and said, no bloody way. That stays because NCDC or National Capital Authority were going to make it more modern.
Sure.
So we should get the tennis courts back and things like that, I suppose.
Good.
Do you find that the new building is a sort of devastated area in the fact that you can't get close to politicians or you can't get, not like...
The new building?
Yeah.
The new building is it's a splendid piece of architecture. Mm. The landscaping is terrific. The artifacts in there are terrific. The portraits, it's a splendid gallery, restaurant, club, great hall, place for the people and so on. There's only one problem, it's not a parliament, the new parliament building. And the reason it's not a parliament, I don't think, is that it's too big. And unlike here in King's Hall, where everybody had to meet and mingle and cross King's Hall, media, members, prime minister, senators, ministers, librarians, senators, public servants, and the ordinary old bloke off the street, all in King's Hall, which was only correct for a house of the people. Up here in the new parliament, members don't relate to other members.
No.
Members don't relate to senators. Members don't relate to ministers. Ministers don't relate properly to the prime minister. And the fact that the media doesn't have the access it should have, that's a question of the building. That is probably not as important as just not having the relationship between the people and the members. I mean, you may remember when it first opened up there, when Hawke was prime minister, and he was very popular, of course, people would come into the auditorium there with the marvellous marble pillars and, you know, beautiful stuff. And they say, and I'd go down and see what they were saying, and you'd hear them say, yeah, now, that's great, beautiful. They say, now, where do we see Bob Hawke? And Bob Hawke is a kilometre away behind all sorts of security. They don't see Bob Hawke.
Well, I remember after question time down here in the old hall, it was like the village green.
Yeah.
If members wanted to get something on air or in the press the next day, they only had to go down and find somebody.
Well, that's what a parliament's about. If a parliament is the house of the people, then the new parliament, the new building, is not a parliament.
Mm.
That's my view. Mm.
Graham Evans once said that he always likened, when he was Hawke's minder, I suppose you'd call him, Graham.
Yeah.
What a minder he must have been too. He always used to call it the village green.
Yeah.
Because that was where you got the microcosm of people and pollination and cross-pollination of ideas.
Yes, you should do.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be too.
If we're in a democracy, well, that's how it should be.
Yeah. The trouble is up there, you walk for years and you wouldn't see a politician, would you?
No. Well, you could go up there now and fire a shot down a corridor, you wouldn't hit anyone. It goes for miles. It's a beautiful building, as I say, but it is not a parliament.
I think somebody overseas visitor, I forget who it was now, with one of the rugby teams, he said it gives me the impression of being a tomb, a sarcophagus, he said, to a dead nation.
It's a great traffic roundabout. It's a magnificent traffic roundabout.
But it's not personalised, is it?
No.
Remote?
No. Remote, yeah.
Remote.
Yeah.
You don't deny, I suppose, I'm sure you won't, that it was obvious that this place had outlived its usefulness.
Yeah. Oh, yes, it had.
Yeah.
But they could have kept this place going if they'd spent half the amount of money that they spent on the new Parliament
and extended it.
Extended it or gone underground at the back or they could have, I'm sure they could have devised a way to keep this as the Parliament, make this a permanent Parliament.
I suppose you and others up there had a good smile when the red windmill was...
I haven't actually seen the red windmill.
Well, I've only seen a picture of it. It was 60 feet high.
Yeah.
And red bands going out for about 8 feet, and it revolved in the wind.
Yeah, and no, I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it, but there was a... what's it, Alan Ramsey? Did you see Alan Ramsey?
I saw Ramsey's article.
I was saying to Noel, I can just imagine Chucky's expletive, expletive, expletive.
Yeah, I saw I read Ramsey on it. Yeah.
Asked them what they were going to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Next day, the National Capital Commission said the project was abandoned.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
overpriced. And and even Doug Abney wrote a rude letter to John Howard. Did you see that too?
Yeah,
which, National Capital Authority, you know, they've got no jurisdiction over that. That parliamentary triangle.
That's right. Mm.
What were the good things about the old building? We've talked about the bad things. The intimacy with politicians, the intimacy with...
From a professional point of view.
The complementation of the press, the media.
Yeah, well, and, well from a press point of view, the intimacy with politicians was, was the best.
Mm.
That was the important aspect of the building.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? It's but at least the old building's still here.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a fine building. And it's going pretty well.
Architecturally, apparently, it's good for another 200 or 300 years now after all the work's done on it. So.
Oh, yeah, and you look at it from the Hall Memorial, you know, the landscaping is superb.
Yeah. It's
fitting into the mould of the new Parliament.
In your time here, who would have been the most approachable Prime Minister to the media? Probably Robert James Lee, I presume, was it?
No.
No?
No, not Harold Holt.
Was he?
Yeah. Holt was the most courteous of Prime Ministers and of Treasurers. Holt, as Treasurer, never had a press secretary. Mm. Very different times.
Mm.
And you could just knock on Harold's door and open the door, and if he was sitting there with someone, he'd say, excuse me, and he'd say, oh, I'll come back later, will you? if there's no one there, he'd say, come in. Harold Holt was the most accessible, most courteous of all Prime Ministers. Hawke was a bit different. By the time he came around, it was television, and he had his minders. And
but the time Hawke came around, of course, he'd given up drinking.
Yeah. You know, Hawke wasn't as approachable. Holt was easily the most approachable.
Yes.
After that, you'd have to say probably John Gordon.
Yes, he was approachable. Very popular.
Approachable, yeah.
Lovely gentleman.
Yeah, I'm not saying they were the best Prime Ministers.
No.
But they were the most approachable, courteous, personable people.
I seem to remember when we first reopened, I think you were here one day, Noel, when Gough Whitlam and John Gorton walked around King's Hall, you remember that day?
Mm-hmm.
And they were arguing about dates and times and places, but they were enjoying themselves. They're on the same wavelength. You know? They were just sort of, that was in so-and-so. No, it wasn't. You know? But they went on for about an hour just going around King's Hall. It was really terrific. That would have been a lovely one to have had on tape. But we haven't seen, well, John Gorton died, of course.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Whitlam, I understand, has got into care, hasn't she, now?
I think so, yeah.
And Gough, what, 93?
I'm not sure. Gough's not looking all that great.
No. What did you think of the crash through policy when he first took over the government?
Oh, typical Whitlam. It was no different to his policy when he was opposition leader. He crashed through.
How many bills did he put through that first session?
Oh, I've forgotten now, but of course
there's never
been anything like that first period when he and Lance Barnard were the government, the two-man government. When his great point was, this is the only government in the history of Australia where its members have all been returned servicemen. That's the two of them.
Yes.
I'd have forgotten how many bills he put through, but
When the portraits of former prime ministers first came back up in the hall, the one that they'd chosen, the portrait gallery for Gough, was the Vernon Pugh one.
Yeah.
You know, the old hunchback one.
Yeah.
And the man looked at it and said, that's not bloody staying there, he said. And it didn't.
Yeah. No, well, his grassroots policy was, I mean, he knew no other way of operating.
He probably set a new benchmark for Australian prime ministers. I don't think ever there will be again the amount of legislation that they got through in the first two or three sittings of his house.
Yeah, probably.
Do you think, in hindsight, that was a good thing? Or?
Well, no, Gough should have. He was far too impatient.
He wanted to do anything too quickly.
He did. He made the mistake of assuming that he had the mandate. It was always his great phrase, I have the mandate. But of course he'd beaten Billy McMahon, he assumed, and it didn't beat him by all that much actually in that 72 election. It wasn't a landslide victory for Gough, partly because he'd previously won seats in the 69 election from Gordon. But he assumed that he had the mandate to do everything that was in his policy speech. And of course, in theory, well, he did. But the great mass of Conservative Australian electorate didn't know all that. And away he went. And the people reacted saying, well, he didn't know he was going to do that all so quickly. That was his mistake, I think, was too fast and not explaining carefully enough what he was doing, even though much of it was of great benefit. He just went too quickly.
Yes. Yeah, I suppose the feeling was he had the mandate, so he just carried on.
Well, he did have the mandate in because he won an election. Yeah. Therefore, he had the mandate.
Yeah.
But the people did not. I mean, massive voters don't understand that.
No. What would you say was the highlight of the old place? The intimacy?
Intimacy, yeah.
The personalisation of relations between the media and the members and the senators?
Absolutely.
The officers of the House?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's none of that up there, is there?
No. The intimacy was the big factor. The personal intimacy of the relationships between the media and the politicians, and between the members and ministers, and between members and senators and the people. The important thing was the people.
Yeah.
They had access.
What was your lasting memory of probably the most vital moment in your years in this old building?
The most vital moment?
Most telling moment politically or?
Well, the biggest event would of course be the dismissal. Because that was actually happened in the building in effect. It happened at Government House, but the aftermath was all here. That would be the single biggest event in Australian politics ever. It was the dismissal.
Well, I came over later in the afternoon to send my stuff in for the Sun Herald on Sunday, and I couldn't believe what had happened. I hadn't heard about it. I wandered in and I forget who I met, and I said, what's all the fuss about? He said, didn't you know? He said, the government's been sacked. Yeah. I said, what?
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest single event in Australian politics, and it was in this building, in effect.
Yeah.
The other really dramatic event in our time, I guess, was Holt just disappearing.
Disappearance of Holt, yeah.
Just Prime Minister just disappearing. I mean, who else has just lost a Prime Minister?
Yeah.
Never found him. That wasn't actually in the building, but the aftermath was in the building when Jack McEwen held his press, having become Prime Minister, having persuaded Casey to make him Prime Minister. Between them, they worked it out. Jack McEwen had his press conference as Prime Minister in the Government Party Room, asked by Alan Reid, can you confirm that you have been telling your colleagues that you will not serve under McMahon? McEwen said, I can confirm that. I say now publicly that I and the Country Party will not serve under McMahon as Prime Minister.
Well, Lee, thank you very much.
Okay. That's
lovely.
A pleasure.
It's beautiful.
That's
thanks
a pleasure.
So much indeed. We may, in fact,
I hope some of it
get you back again.
I hope some of it is some use.
I'm sure.
To somebody.